The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
This is from the Gateless Gate, a koan collection. Daitsu Chisho Buddha, the main case. Once a monastic student asked Priest Joe of Koyo, Daitsu Chisho Buddha sat in the meditation hall for 10 kalpas, but the Dharma of the Buddha did not manifest itself, and he could not attain Buddhahood. Why was this? Priest Joe replied, your question is really splendid indeed. The student again said, he sat in the meditation hall. Why didn't he not attain Buddhahood? And Priest Joe replied, because he is a non-attained Buddha. Master Woman's commentary. I approve the old barbarian's realization, but I don't approve his understanding. If an ordinary person knows, they are a sage. If the sage understands it, they are an ordinary person. The verse. Better than knowing the body is knowing the mind in peace. When the mind is realized, the body is no longer anxious. When mind and body are fully realized, the saintly hermit declines to become a noble. So for Buddhists, this week was interdependence week. And this koan here, I don't know why I was drawn to it, but some things I was hearing perhaps about, like, am I getting it? And this little it thing, like, what's this it? Some of us said, I've been sitting for so long on this cushion. What is realization? Am I getting it? Are they getting it? Is anybody getting it? What is it? If we chant the Buddha way is unattainable, what are we trying to attain? Why, after a period of zazen, doesn't reality appear to me clearly? And in the meantime, we have all these miraculous gifts operating, the gifts of our life, how much we're given, dharma that is flowing through us, that is seeing, tasting, touching, smelling. The simple appreciation of our life with all our habits, our talents, our tendencies, our tenderness, our losses, our joys, our suffering, our life. These are gifts offered to us to take up this offering of the Dharma. We see, perhaps we might feel broken, but we're not broken. We are not broken. That whatever we're experiencing is part of our wholeness. And we can set free the someone that binds us, the thoughts that bind us. I thought this was a good koan for our time right now. Hope everybody's breathing deep. There's a lot of heat in many realms. The human realm is the realm of communication. And Trungpa Rinpoche once said that that realm will make us or break us. It can break us in certain ways, how we communicate. And we see how easily, at least I do, I'll speak for myself, we can be led astray by words, what people are saying, what we're reading, We get caught and fixed so easily by words, by views, by our own views, by others. It's like a shooting range out there of views and opinions. So we have to stay aware of that and of our own, and okay, I'll go to that, but I won't listen to that. We start doing it ourselves, dividing up, thinking we know things, caught in our intellect, forgetting we have a body that does all these beautiful things, becoming upset, miserable, fearful. Yeah, I feel it. I practice it. How do we wake up from this fear dream that we could be possessed by and let our desperate grasping for something solid, something knowable, be, just be what it is? And there's an intelligence here that is connected to what we want and the basic intelligence of our being is bodhicitta, the desire to awaken, the desire to do that for ourselves, for others, for this world, because we know it's interdependence day, every day. We're not apart. So how do we not rest in our self-centered grasping? So for those of you who are new, and wow, nice to see so many of you come for the first time today. These koans are teaching devices in our Zen tradition. And it's been a big part of my training. And I didn't take them up for a long time because I continue to work on them with my teacher. But they're all pointing to liberation. They're not games. They're not puzzles. It's all pointing to our liberation. And this one in particular about knowing and words and release from ideas of who we are. They're pointing to the free-flowing expression of what is true to help us release from ideas of who we are. And they test us to see if we'll get taken away from our true self, caught by our mind, by our fixed ideas, what we think realization is in this case, a non-attained Buddha, attained Buddha. Isn't that what I want? Don't I want to be an attained Buddha? And how do we stay connected to the source? Each koan is asking us if we can see through our particular fixed ideas. When do we get to be called a Buddha? Why are we not enlightened? Or are we? Is it just covered? Isn't that light always with us, our Buddha nature? Why, when I sit here, Buddha Dharma or reality doesn't seem to appear? How come after 30 minutes, reality doesn't manifest so brightly? Or does it? So we start within our life and practice to accept the offerings we've been given. And we try and rely upon our awakened mind, our Buddha mind, take refuge in the Buddha, the one that may have brought you here today, but you might not be calling it that as yet. But for those of you who are new and just stepped in, what brought you here? What made you say, I'm going to a Buddhist temple this morning? That's a raising of the Bodhi mind. We take refuge in the Dharma, which is all phenomena, all things that arise, all things that we practice our life with, and recognizing we can't do this alone. Tenfu spoke about sangha, community, relationships, to all things offered to help us develop. And so when we turn inward, it's important to recognize that thought is not experience. There can be a foundation of experience where thoughts are part of it and they arise, yet most of us mistake thinking to be real and a direct experience. It's like if I think of my sister right now. Hi, Ronnie. Is Ronnie here? No, she's in my head. I see her. It's a thought of her. But at most, it gets us to reflect on what is the thought. Are they real? You know, we start with counting the breath as a process to enter. And we see how much real estate it takes up. You know, I remember getting quiet the first time and going like, whoa. It was just like a ping pong, one of those, you know, games. Pew, 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 pew. I was just going from thought to thought to thought to thought to thought. And I realized I never even asked, like, what is that? What's happening? What is a thought? Is it real and true? Are they me? What is actually happening? So we come face to face with what will we trust. And we learn to see that we can set a thought aside for the practice of Zazen. Something arises, a thought, juice in our brain, and we say, we see it, and we decide, okay, I'm going to set that aside for now and just anchor myself in breathing. And we see if we can trust that. And it comes again, and we see if we can return. And then we see, like, what we might say, like, why do I even want to do that? And if we can make contact with that, why would I want to set that aside? My thoughts are great. I love them. Like, bring it on. It's like, they're fun. Sometimes they're not. So why, if we can find out, like, what are we doing? What are we making space for? What are we learning here? What vastness, what other aspect of ourself can emerge? What will we do with these gifts of eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind? As Mary Oliver says, what will we do with this one wild and precious life? And in this koan, we might recognize this is not about this supreme wisdom person. This is like a tongue twister. Daitsu Chisho, Buddha, who sat so long ago. No, it's about us right now, about our student mind, and about this questioner's mind. Can we get into this questioner's mind who's coming forth to the teacher? Because Supreme Wisdom Buddha sounds so super impressive. This Buddha was so sincerely practicing, yet he could not attain Buddhahood. How can this be? In this monk, in you, does it touch a nerve? All the time you're putting in with your practice on the cushion? So this line, this question, this story he read, this little piece of news, is from the Lotus Sutra, which is a classic text of the Mahayana school. And this was the news of his time. He didn't have internet or the web or newspapers, probably. Just as we may open a computer now or our phone and read the news. So this is the news he gets. There's this Supreme Buddha in a meditation hall for 10 kalpas, which is a long time. But the Dharma of the Buddha did not manifest. The Buddha Dharma didn't manifest. So we all know very well that media can say anything it wants to about climate, economics, politics, our country, racism, sneakers, medicine, on and on, what we should eat, what we shouldn't eat. So confusing. We might look for things we agree with and say, yep, and then read it, and then get riled up that we find something we don't agree with, and we become fearful because we read it. So each part of this koan is a kind of a testing like that. It's this little squib. Right? I learned that a little. You know those squibs in the newspaper? They're little tiny reports. It's a little squib that the student opened in the Lotus Sutra. Dai Tzu Chishu Buddha sat in the meditation hall for 10 kalpas, but the Dharma of the Buddha did not manifest itself. He could not attain Buddha. Why was this? The student asks. I know about this because I read it. This is how things are, but I'll ask the teacher. As I said, a kalpa is an infinitely long period of time. I don't know, somebody did some analogy with like moving poppy seeds. And that's how long, like 10 kalpas was, like to get a pile of big thing of poppy seeds to the other side. Sometimes a period of zazen can feel like 10 kalpas, right? Where's that jikido? It's like, we're here for 10 years? I mean, what's going on? So if we are this student, how might we feel? Maybe we think of ourselves in our practice. I can feel the student's fear arising and the desperation. I've been on this cushion for decades. What if I don't attain it? Yikes, what's the point of all this? What the hell is happening? What do we think we should attain? Is there something we get, attain, or possess in this practice? When we say the Buddha way is unattainable, I vow to attain it, are we contradicting ourselves? We're vowing to attain something unattainable. Why? Remember that we are gifted. We are complete. We are in completion. I like that. Say it that way. Incomplete. We are in completion. We are whole from the start. And we do hear about this thing called realization. We sincerely want to come to awakening. Perhaps we're the type, when the goal is spelled out, any goal for that matter, if we want it bad enough, we're kind of like a dog after a bone. We just go to grab it. We think we need to get this thing that we imagine it to be. Yet we never really know what that something is. We have thoughts, we have ideas, we have opinions, and yet we drive for this future accomplishment. And that's such a powerful force, a habit, always striving for something other than here, what we have here right now. It's got to be, got to get that thing. And we cling desperately because the unknown is agonizing, could be. That's why we do art practice, because art practice thrives on the not knowing, even though there too we try and pin things down. And something in us dies in that knowing, that you have to keep a little space of when you enter it to not know what you're doing. You might have techniques and things, but then it's like you have to drop your knowing and be a beginner. It's hard to be a beginner. And even within one lifetime, we can keep perpetuating a way of responding to things. Same circumstance over and over. It's what we work with in practice. It's like planting a seed that sprouts and grows. A seed can only grow because it meets various conditions. We plant seeds with every little action of our body, mouth and our body, our speech and our thought. And everything we do affects the globe, affects the environment. If we're planting generous seeds, generosity grows. If we're planting kind seeds, kindness grows. If we're planting greedy seeds, greed grows. So we have all these seeds in some ways, but what we choose to water to grow. So when we're focused on the end product, call it realization or whatever, we sometimes can miss the life we're living, the process. And that's what we work on in art practices, just being in a process. Not, if we get something, if we get a song or an image, bravo. But how are we as we're in it? Are we living it? Or are we looking for the thing, which we don't even know? And then we make something up. We do not see it even as we walk on it, as we chant it. One time I heard my teacher, which surprised me completely. There was a student who was really going to extremes in their sitting. Like they were like looking like ash. That's how fatigued they were. But they were sitting to become a Buddha. And the teacher said, you know, you look a bit unhealthy and fatigued. Take some time for self-care. And like, I'd never heard them say that, right? And that's what they said to this student. Take some time for self-care. So for some who push too much, this could be a very novel experience. And this was very needed in this person's practice. And then I heard them ask the student, why are you rushing? What's your hurry? To which the student said, there's no time to waste. You know, we always talk about practicing like there's a fire upon your head. And sometimes we can take that to an extreme. It's like, yes, yes, and don't kill yourself. Take care of yourself. And Buddha already said, like, that doesn't work. Starving and doing all these drastic practices are not helpful. You got to have a vehicle. Got to take care of your car. So Roshi said something like, how do you know that enlightenment is running on before you so that you have to rush after it? Perhaps it's behind you and all you need to do is encounter it. Stand still. But you're running away from it. Stand still. Sometimes it's covering up something, all that pushing to get. At the same time, we shouldn't take that to mean we shouldn't sit. We shouldn't sit a lot. There's not a need for continuous sitting and dropping in. But that Zen practice is not limited to sitting. But we'll be able to see more clearly the nature, the source, as we see the arising of phenomena in our mind and begin to touch that emptiness, that vastness, that questioning of what is this that is coming up? That's really important. And it's generally when we give up our ideas about Zazen, what it will do for us, and we just sit, that we actually clear a space for realization. Because it's not a thing. Everything we face, all that we are, is the site of enlightenment. Guo Gu said, it is not that our vexations or habit tendencies are perfect, but our true nature is. He could not attain Buddhahood. Why was this? Priest Joe replied, your question is, it's translated as reasonable or splendid. The student again said, he sat in the meditation, did you hear me? I said, he sat in the meditation hall 10 kalpas, why didn't he attain it? So how can a teacher like Priest Joe reply to such a question to help the student? How can a teacher, how can a parent answer a child so that the child, that beautiful question, isn't taken away, right? That the student or the child can realize what it truly means to live in their nature, to just be human through and through. So part of this koan is about us saying, falling into that, I know. We know so much. Some know we don't know. And we say, if only people could listen to me, we'd be at peace. Or that person would be a much better place. So many fixed ideas, it's hard to get to the cure. Recently, I took my friend to the doctor, and they were really thorough in understanding what was happening with their body and did a lot of research. And you know how that can be. You look up anything that you're experiencing and you're like, that's it. That's what I have. And then you get to the next thing. No, maybe it's that. That describes it perfectly. And you just go through and you're just like, oh my God, I have like this, 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 and this. So they went in, and everything the doctor tried to engage with, they were like, no, it's not that. No, it's not that. And the doctor stepped out for a minute, and I said, do you want to hear anything? Like, why are you here? Why did you even come? And they were like, oh, you're right. I'm acting like I know exactly what's going on. And maybe I know a lot. It's my body. But can I listen to what else is to get help, right? We are stubborn creatures. Daito Roshi would drive home, an unexamined mind is a dangerous one. An unexamined mind is a dangerous one. Do we need proof? And I wondered, is there a time where our opinions and views are necessary? And I was like, yeah. But not if we're fixed on them. But yeah. It's not like, you know, you hear like, don't have fixed views by not holding two fixed views. But can't we have them in our opinion? Yeah. But if we take a stance in a position, there's gonna be friction. If it's in that knowing, there's no room for anything else. So to watch, we don't keep feeding our view because we'll become more and more narrow, isolated in rejecting everything that doesn't fit how we think things are or should be. One psychologist I used to listen to on Philadelphia radio, he used to say we suffer from hardening of the categories. I always liked that term. We're stubborn creatures. I was like, what kind of illness is that, right? Hardening of the categories. It's hard to receive when we need to be right, to be sure. It's a state where we can't receive feedback either. You know, sometimes we need to have creative or critical analysis of what we're doing. But if it's always, I'm right, that means you have to be wrong. Somebody's got to be wrong. I have to be right. So you're wrong. So we continue to practice, and one day it may dawn on us. True knowing is not from knowing, but more from not knowing. Not as ignorance or avoidance, but if we really examine our beliefs and our opinions, a lot of it's probabilities. And we can discover how many unexamined assumptions we make about everything, our parents, our family, our friends, about what's happening. And it turns out, when we really look and question, it's like Swiss cheese, right? There's a lot of holes in knowing. It's a very brittle foundation. We can't know the whole of anything. So there's a billion bits of information that go into something. And whether or not we have a skillful opinion or not, that doesn't matter. Just there's so much. How can we know? So if we can be curious and open, have wonder at the base, we'll be learning. We'll have a more of a beginner's mind. We won't be so wound and fearful. Practice is taking down the walls of the mind, as the Heart Sutra states, with no hindrance in the mind, with no walls in the mind, therefore no fear. Far beyond deluded thoughts, this is peace. This is peace. The beginning of wisdom, prajna, before knowing. That's prajna, the true prajna. It's not intellect, it's before knowing. There's knowing, an open knowing of the seeing the vastness of all the conditions, the emptiness of all the five conditions. Edward Kant's translated as having no thought coverings in the mind. It's not that we don't have thought, but it's not covered. Hogan Sensei once asked us in a talk, what would your mind be if it was a mind of not having? A mind of each moment of your life being where you are, where you don't know, even though you are fully conscious and present. Is there attainment? Is there non-attainment? What do you desire in practice? What do you wish to make yours? To own, to have, to possess? Is that possible? This is the basis of this koan. Priest Joe replied, your question is appropriate. It's really good. Really good. And that's a core piece to this koan, that response. Leaving it in the student's hands to answer, how come? How come? Left them with a beautiful question. And there are many kinds of questions we can ask. Questions from our desire to know, understand, or that help us investigate our confusion. And sometimes asking a question is a way of keeping us at a distance. When might that be? When we're afraid, the question becomes a kind of protection. And you've probably heard that there were certain questions the Buddha wouldn't answer. He wouldn't answer. He wouldn't say, he said, because answering these questions will not help you address your suffering. So the Buddha, I found this, the Buddha was careful to classify questions according to how they should be answered based on how helpful they were to gaining awakening. Some questions deserved a categorical answer, that is, one that holds true across the board. Some he answered analytically, redefining or refining the terms before answering, and some required counter-questioning to clarify the issue in the questioner's mind. But if the question was an obstacle on the path, the Buddha put it aside. When Vashagata, the wanderer, asked him point blank whether or not there is a self, you remember? The Buddha remained silent, which means that the question has no helpful answer. As he later explained to Ananda, to respond either yes or no to this question would be to side with the opposite extremes of wrong view. Some argue that the Buddha didn't answer with no because Vachagata wouldn't have understood the answer. And then there's another passage I found where the Buddha advises all the monks to avoid getting involved in questions such as, What am I? Do I exist? Do I not exist? Because they lead to answers like, I have a self, I have no self, but both are a thicket of views, a writhing of views, a contortion of views that get in the way of awakening. So this teacher is a spiritual boomerang pointed back to the student. Who are you? The student throws out a theory, something they read, sitting in their sureness of something. Great. That's a great, appropriate question. Who is this that is asking? From what mind did this come? Usually we don't question our thoughts. We grab them and we run off, right? Round and round. And that's why sitting is so essential, because we can see where we get caught and examine and set them free. We can stop. We can cease. Doesn't mean thoughts disappear, but we can cease our grasp, taking them up. When we were doing a retreat with families years ago, a family retreat with a bunch of monks, great. None of us have kids. Well, Hogan does. But anyway, Shugen Sensei was the one speaking with the parents. This was like in the 90s. And he started by saying, I'm not a parent, you know, but you asked me how I teach my kids about Zen or about religion, about awakening. And he said, your kids are watching every move you make. They're watching how you wash dishes, how you handle plates, how you handle objects. They're watching how you speak and listening with their whole being, how you speak on the phone to someone, how you meet someone in the grocery store when you take them, how they greet your neighbors. They're watching how you react to a spill, to a cut, to a fall, to news, to the news you're reading. They're watching. They're listening. They're receiving transmission, how to live. That's religion. He said, when they ask you a really important question, leave them with that. That's a really good question. How did you come to that? What else does it bring up? Give them more questions. Allow the heart and mind to churn, as Priest Joe did for this student. Joe responds, because he is a non-attained Buddha. What does it mean to be non-attained? We are whole and complete. But what's our fundamental nature? What is consciousness? What is the mind that sees, hears, smells, tastes, and touch? Breath practice, shikantaza, koans, all say, stop. Just return to the source. Hold this space. Touch this source. See that this attainment is not a thing. And then we can turn to see how things arise and disappear as a miraculous display. It's because there's nothing fixed that all of that can come in such miraculous form. So we can just watch a debate and see this miraculous display of karma. Oh my God, right? And seeing in that way, it's a, you have a different kind of life. We have a different kind of life. We can embrace a feeling and just say yes to that experience. Yes, this has arisen. Yes, this has happened. Yes, there's more possibility. There's more expansion that we can have within that. More spaciousness of our being infinite possibilities, a wider view of who and what this is. So in a way, it does not negate any of the things we see in this world, the politics, the climate crisis, whatever comes to mind, life, death, anxiety, restlessness, that we can practice all of it, the worrying, the restlessness, the debilitating statements we make, like, oh my gosh, we're so broken. Oh my God, what's going to happen to me? Oh my God, what's going to happen to this world? What's the point? All this may arise because of our hooks in thinking that we know something and we can remain open to possibilities. Buddha realized this. He says we can touch the liberation from being bound, our true nature, which is right here in the midst of all that we have to deal with. Right here in the midst of all we have to do it, deal with. So, speaking from my own place, how does this fully unattained Buddha practice? Sometimes I cry my eyes out. Sometimes I apologize. Sometimes I paint, dance, bow, serve, protest, sound drums, give talks. That's how I practice as an unattained Buddha. It's not a magical else. It's an acceptance, an opening lived through by the energy that is our essential nature. That is liberation. The verse says, better than knowing the body is knowing the mind in peace. When the mind is realized, the body is no longer anxious. When body and mind are fully realized, the sage declines to become special. Body and mind are one wholeness. How delightful. And we may actually touch that possibility and see we're already completely human. No matter what we're going through, we're completely human. We don't have to get anywhere. What is there to attain? It's not a thing. Our mind of not knowing is always fresh and unfamiliar, alive, responsive. So may each of us be able to face what is going on in our life and see the one who hears, smells, tastes, and touches with no opinions in the mind. Enter wonder and see what is true, what your direct experience shows you. We always have power. We always have power. And we will need to dig deep. We'll have to be patient, discern. This is all part of practice. And we always have a choice to acknowledge our Buddha-ness, our fear, our responsibility to ourself and all living beings, or not. Daido Roshi would often say, there's no place to put this gigantic body. That's how big we are. There's no place to put this gigantic body. Each breath can be a new beginning, no comparison to what came before. Where is there attainment? In this breath, in this moment, where are you?
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.